was marked by austerity regarding the quantity and quality of food permitted on fasting days, as well as the time wherein such food might be legitimately taken. Aside here, the reason I'm invoking this is to give a much truncated version of the longer, rather painstaking and rather depressing reading from Dom Guérinier's liturgical year on the history of Lent, in which that learned commentator tells us how wimpy Lent got up to his day. Now, he was writing, he died in 1875. So he's writing in the mid to late 19th century, telling us how much the Lenten discipline was relaxed. Subsequent to that, it was severely relaxed. I mean, well, that's kind of an oxymoron, isn't it? It was extremely relaxed. It was relaxed to make it so loose that it wouldn't be recognized as Lent in any other epoch of the history of the church. What we do now, what we're required to do now, I should say, as a required legal minimum, would never be recognized as Lent. In historical Christianity, not in the East, not in the West, not anywhere. It really is disgraceful. And it's kind of depressing to read. In fact, he even mentions how depressing it is, how disheartening it is to see how the mitigations entered in over the centuries. So what I'm going to read to you now from the Catholic Encyclopedia is that much truncated. So in the first place, more than one meal was strictly prohibited. At this meal, flesh, meat, eggs, butter, cheese, and milk were interdicted, meaning forbidden. Besides these restrictions, abstinence from wine, especially during Lent, was enjoined. Furthermore, during Holy Week, the fare consisted of bread, salt, herbs, and water. Okay, as a BAM aside here, I note that they mentioned salt. It's interesting. Somebody had the wisdom to know that we need electrolytes. And if you're fasting, if you're taking up some sort of a severe fast for some days, like a no food fast, then make sure you get salt, because if your body's deprived of electrolytes, it's not good. Okay, so moving right along. I'll back up a little bit. So furthermore, during Holy Week, the fare consisted of bread, salt, herbs, and water. And Dom Guérinier points out that this is essentially the diet of Adam and Eve. They had no meats. They didn't eat fish meats. They didn't eat milk meats. They didn't eat milk meats, of course, being cheese and yogurt and things like that. They did not eat any kind of animal products. In other words, they were vegans. As strange as it is to say, that's what Adam and Eve had in the Garden of Eden. And the vegetation from the garden itself provided them all of the nutriment that they needed for perfect health that they had in the garden. Finally, this meal was not allowed until sunset. So you fasted all day, and then at sunset you could have your meal. St. Ambrose, St. John Chrysostom, St. Basil furnish us unequivocal testimony concerning the three characteristics of the Black Fast. The keynote of their teaching is sounded by St. Bernard in his third sermon on Lent, where he says, quote, "Hitherto we have fasted only until noon," that is 3 p.m., "whereas now, during Lent, kings and princes, clergy and laity, rich and poor, will fast until evening." So every day of Lent was a day of black fast. That meal, such as what I said, they couldn't have any flesh meat, any eggs, any butter, any cheese, or any milk. It is quite certain that the days of Lent, as well as those preceding ordination, were marked by the Black Fast. This regime continued until the 10th century, when the custom of taking the only meal of the day at 3 o'clock was introduced. So it went from sundown to 3 o'clock. And that was, again, 10th century, so the 900s. In the 14th century, the hour of taking the meal was changed to noon to noonday, to noontime, 12 noon. Shortly afterwards, the practice of taking a collation in the evening began to gain ground. Collation coming from the book, the Colaciones, which is a collection of monastic sayings and anecdotes from the one of the great monastic writers from southern France, that was read in the monasteries as prescribed by Saint Benedict. So since they were reading from this book called the Colaciones at the time that they took their meal, that their little light snack, the concept of that light snack became known as the Colazione. It got named after the book that they were reading from during the time that they were eating it. So that's where collation comes from. But it's a light snack. Okay. Shortly afterwards, the practice of taking a collation in the evening began to gain ground. Finally, the custom of taking a crust of bread and some coffee in the morning was introduced in the early part of the 19th century. During the past 50 years, and this is being written in or around 1912 or so, during the past 50 years, owing to ever-changing circumstances of time and place, the Church has gradually relaxed the severity of penitential requirements so that now little more than a vestige of former rigor obtains. This is just to kind of let those who are unaware of it know that the current Lenten fast, which, by the way, only obliges us to fast on 2 days of the year, period. We're only obliged by canon law to fast on 2 days of the year. Those days are Ash Wednesday and Good Friday. Previously, even before 1962, all of the days that we were obliged to, I should say, until the changes of Paul VI, whichever year in the 1960s that took place, all of the days of Lent were fast days. Now, the obligations to fast are only people of certain ages, okay? So there were people who were allowed, who were given dispensations because of age, and it was always understood that, you know, pregnant women, nursing mothers, people with health condition, serious health conditions and so forth were excused. That's not debatable. In fact, St. Thomas Aquinas addresses that question in his Summa under the question whether everybody is bound to this precept. But the thing that we need to focus on is there was a much more serious discipline. Not only was fasting required every day during Lent, there was a kind of a fast during the Ember days. There at least a partial fast. There was something for vigils of certain feasts to prepare for the feasts, and there were also. Yeah, so vigils and Ember days would be the – oh, and Advent too. Advent had its own form of fasting, less rigorous than the Lenten fast. So the it's very sad that we've lost this, but nonetheless we have. So there's a version of fasting in the early church. Interestingly enough, we learn both from St. Thomas Aquinas and from the Catholic Encyclopedia article that fasting is a dictate of the natural law. It's a dictate of the natural law. Now, let me have the author of the Catholic Encyclopedia article flesh this out for you.